Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to That's Politics, where I break down the political news you might have heard recently to its bare bones. I'm your host, Mackenzie Atkinson, and I have a special guest, Dr. Chris Cooper, who is a Robert Lee Madison Distinguished Professor, the director of the Hare Institute for Public Policy at Western Carolina University, and a professor of a wide range of American political topics. Throughout the podcast, you'll hear my interview with him, and I'll jump in and explain some of the topics you'll hear a little bit more in depth.
You talk about the unaffiliated voter, and they are the biggest group of registered voters here in North Carolina. Why do you think that this is a predominant thing here in North Carolina?
Yeah, so unaffiliated is, as you just said very well, the largest group of registered voters in our state. So the reason for it's a sort of structural partially and cultural partially. So let's take those one at a time. So the structural piece, in 1977, we created the unaffiliated category. And for a good while, until 1988, I believe, if you were unaffiliated, you could not vote in a primary. We had what are called closed primaries. And for that reason, nobody really selected it. Like, why would you disenfranchise yourself from a primary? Then in 1988, the Republican Party said, you know, maybe we should let the unaffiliated voters come into our primary. And then 8 years later, the Democrats finally opened up their primaries. And once that happened, it was off to the races. That's one reason why, right? So you increase your choice. And I think the other really is cultural and generational to some degree. And in a world where everything from the kind of beer people drink to what kind of car they drive to what neighborhood they live in is influenced by their partisanship and influences their partisanship, it kind of makes sense that some people might say, you know, I'd rather folks really not know that about me.
I've had someone decline an interview with me because they looked at my voter registration and I was a registered Democrat at the time. Wow. So I can understand where some people almost like, why would you kind of, it kind of felt like a violation of my privacy.
Totally.
Do you think it's like a trend where people go from like Democrat to unaffiliated to Republican, like throughout the course of their time or vice versa?
Not a ton, right? So we can actually get data on this. So for party switchers in the state of North Carolina, we get about 100,000 party switches per year, right? So that's 1 million over the course of 10 years. That's not nothing, but that's not the primary driver of partisan change in the state of North Carolina. So more of it is the churn, people moving into the state, people moving out of the state, people dying, people coming into the electorate. That's where the big movement is. It's much less about people actually changing your partisan identification.
Now, when you say it's every year, are you talking like every single fiscal year or are we doing just election years?
So every year, on average, 100,000 people, well, there are 100,000 party switches. And the reason I got really careful with my language there is some people do change back and forth. Like, so I found one person who changed 30 times in the course of a year. Why you would do that for fun, I don't know, but some people do.
That sounds like a hassle.
It does sound like a hassle, right? And so you only see little spikes, and the spikes are actually kind of interesting. So when Madison Cawthorn was our member of Congress running for re-election, you did actually see greater than average party switching from the Democratic Party to unaffiliated as those folks wanted to vote Madison Cawthorn out of office, frankly, and they did.
A little bit of background on Madison Cawthorn for those of you that don't know about him. He is a former member of Congress that served as North Carolina's 11th Congressional District Representative in Washington, D.C. During his time in office, he had a slew of controversies. He attended and spoke to the masses of the January 6th riots on Capitol Hill where people challenged the results of the 2020 presidential election. There was an attempt to disqualify him from the 2020 midterm elections by the North Carolina Board of Elections for his involvement on January 6th. He was charged with driving on a revoked license in March of 2022. Next on the long list of scandals, Politico obtained and published undated photos of Cawthorn wearing women's lingerie at a public party. The cherry on top came in May of 2022, right before the Republican primary election on May 17th, where a video allegedly showed him naked in bed with a friend, quote unquote. Cawthorn responded saying he was, quote, "I was being crass with a friend, trying to be funny. We were acting foolish and joking. That's it, unquote. That friend just so happened to be his cousin. Needless to say, he lost the 2022 midterm elections.
This is talking more about like how parties cater to the unaffiliated voter. Mm-hmm. I remember taking Dr. Hayden's Congress class and she made a whole thing about this. I remember seeing the whiteboard. It was just chaos mm-hmm. trying to explain or understand how each party tries to catch the moderate voter.
Mm-hmm.
Political parties aren't inherently bad. Where on the scale of healthy to unhealthy would you say the current political party divide is based on how willing the parties are to cater to moderate voters or are unaffiliated voters here in North Carolina?
That's great. So I think one thing we need to say is that most unaffiliateds are not independents, but most independents are unaffiliated, right? So many people are what we call shadow partisans.
Let's pause real quick and talk about shadow partisans and who they are. Now, people don't want to be associated with political parties for a number of reasons. It may be because you may not align with all of their beliefs or they're way too partisan for your tastes. But you may align with a majority of one of the party's political beliefs in general. So you register as an unaffiliated, but then go down ballot and just vote for the entire party. Because here in North Carolina, you can go in and look up every single voter that is registered in the state. And you can see their party affiliation and what ballot that they pull for their primaries. So if you pull up my voter registration in North Carolina, you'll see that I'm an unaffiliated voter. But for the past two primaries, I have pulled a Democratic primary ballot. The underlying point being that you align with one of the parties, but you don't officially align with them. You'll still vote for them, but you're a registered unaffiliated.
I think the parties know they need to reach out to unaffiliated voters. They don't do a very good job reaching out to independent voters. And part of what happened is it used to be there were these people who ran around the mountains called conservative Democrats, and they're gone. Right. So we had a member of Congress here, Heath Shuler, who was a very, very conservative Democrat. Right. So you're somebody who was pro-life, very pro-guns, and he was a registered Democrat. Heath Shuler's long gone. And we just don't have those kind of folks anymore. So what's happened is you used to have some similarity with somebody in another party. Right. So if you're a conservative Democrat, you might find some friends on the Republican side who are also conservative or a liberal Republican. Same thing to the Democratic Party. Today, there almost is no such thing as a liberal Republican or a conservative Democrat. Sort of perfect sorting of ideology, liberal conservative, into partisanship, Republican Democrat, has meant there's just nobody trying to get the middle anymore. And so what's interesting and I think somewhat ironic is what we complain about today, the partisanship and the polarization, we actually did on purpose because we didn't love the way it was before.
Now, why didn't they? I'm trying to wrap my head around. Sure. Why did they not like that?
Yeah, I think the idea was that people weren't voting based on policy. So if you start off with the assumption that we should be basing our vote based on the public policies that we think that our candidate should be proposing, right, and that they support, and line those up, well, people weren't really able to do that. What they were doing instead was, I am a Republican or I am a Democrat. Why? Is it because I'm pro-choice or pro-life? No, it's just because I happen to like that party. And so the idea was, hey, maybe what we need is almost like a proxy, right? So if you think about the R or the D on the ballot as a proxy for a host of issues, and I think most of us do that, right? So if you see an R next to the name on the ballot, you go, well, that person's probably pro-life, right? That person probably wants tighter border security. That person probably wants lower taxation. If you see a D next to somebody's name, that person is probably pro-choice. They're probably more pro-gay rights and certainly more pro-trans rights. They probably want immigrants to have an easier time getting in the country and becoming citizens. Right. Well, maybe that's okay that we actually know those things about people was the idea that hey, you know, most of us don't spend forever researching every candidate. So if the R and the D is a shorthand for policy, maybe that's actually better, was the argument at the time.
Okay. Now, you said in the book that polarization is growing, not shrinking. Can you mm-hmm. talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So because of those factors we just talked about, polarization, the difference between the two parties is growing. And so part of it is cultural. I sort of jokingly before said, hey, you know, what you're partisanship is, you know, determines what kind of beer you drink or what kind of car you drive or what neighborhood you live in, right? All of that is the cause and the effect in some ways of partisanship. And so it means that we have less and less and less in common across the parties. And that is, for a while, political scientists thought, well, maybe it's not happening in the electorate, right? Maybe it's just the politicians that are so polarized. And now what we found is, no, it's everywhere. And there's an interesting example in Nebraska. Not much interesting in Nebraska, but this example is interesting. So Nebraska is the one state in the country that doesn't have partisan legislative elections. So it's actually, they're nonpartisan. You go to vote and it doesn't have a D or an R next to their name. And so folks who wanted to study this said, well, maybe this is good, right? Maybe we'll see less polarization in Nebraska because they don't have the D and the R. And what they found is about the same levels of polarization. That partisanship and that polarization finds its way through almost no matter what, right? There's all these other cues we give about partisanship. And so what that means is compromise is less and less likely, less and less possible.
Now, I read the book, How Democracies Die. I think you also referenced it in your book. They had talked and pretty much pointed the finger in that book saying the Republican Party is the one that kind of pushed this idea of no compromise. Now, what do you have to say about that? Like, is both parties to blame for this? Just one or the other?
Yeah, I mean, on the compromise piece, and it's an excellent book. I recommend it to everybody. I mean, I think part of where they end up laying the blame is into 1994, is to Newt Gingrich and that massive group of Republicans who came in 94 under kind of a no-compromise idea. And look, it worked. It worked politically. And those House members then later went to the United States Senate. So there's another book called The Gingrich Senators. And the argument is that that freshman class in 94, led by Gingrich, ultimately also changed the United States Senate. And so the How Democracies Die book is saying that group of legislators really ultimately are the ones who said, no more compromise, we're done with this. I think to some, they are a great example, but nothing comes out of nowhere, right? So, I mean, I think we were clearly moving towards that before. And in particular, in How Democracies Die, I think their point is that the Republican Party, in their view, has taken more policy stances that run counter to small d democratic principles.
Time out. What does small d democratic mean? Well, it's talking about democracy as a noun. So when political scientists say little d democracy, we are talking about democracy in general, not the party. When we say big D democratic, we're talking about the political party, the Democratic Party. There's a little distinction, and we just like to clarify so that people don't get confused if we're talking about a party or about democracy.
Now, what do you say about this no compromise? How does that like reflect our state of democracy and the health of it if no one's willing to compromise, but the whole idea of democracy is compromise?
Yeah, I think it's really scary. I mean, if Josh Stein accepts an appointment from the president of the United States and people's response is don't work with those people, you know, I don't know how we're supposed to accomplish anything. I mean, the reality is we live in an era of small majorities. And each party nationally is going to lose pretty soon. I don't know exactly when it's going to be, but you know, most likely the Republicans have a small advantage in the U.S. House right now. In 2 years, the Democrats are going to have a small advantage. And so if neither one is willing to compromise, then we've just described 8 years where we're going to get nothing done, right? And so the same thing happens in North Carolina because it is such a purple state, because it is a state where we don't know exactly what the outcome is going to be in a few years. If people are not willing to compromise, we're not going to get better legislation that benefits more people.
There's still a lot more to talk about when it comes to polarization that I can't cover in just one episode. I'll continue to talk about the impact of polarization on specific topics in the upcoming episodes. I also talked to Dr. Cooper about a wide variety of topics covered in his book, Anatomy of a Purple State. So expect to hear more from him in the upcoming episodes as well. Thank you for tuning in this week to That's Politics, where Dr. Chris Cooper and I talked about the unaffiliated voters in North Carolina and polarization in general. Tune in next week, where I'll talk about voting security and the voting process here in North Carolina. I'm your host, Mackenzie Atkinson, and I'll see you next time.